from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 116 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason. Tonight, I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Hello. Real fast, I want to show you my shirt. It's very important. Oh,
this is good for podcast.
Well, you can read what it says, Jason.
Give me full size or give me death.
Ugh. I think he's talking about candy.
It is. We are recording it.
He's talking about candy. You can't see, so it could be anything. I mean, you're asking for full size.
I mean, no one wants, like, if you're going to if you're gonna insert something into an orifice, it should be full size. I'm just saying.
We're off to a great start.
Yeah. But, I think we're all in the post-Halloween hangover. Recording the day after.
100%.
Yeah. So I'm a full-size candy bar house, which is something I always wanted to do as a kid. And like, I always loved those houses. I said, man, one day I'm going to do it. Last year I started doing it, and you'll get some kids that don't give a shit, but like the ones that get super excited are worth it. Now, yeah. For my candy experiment, you know what no one wanted?
What?
M&Ms. I don't know.
My kids don't pick those a lot when we're picking candy and stuff anymore.
And it was interesting because I had almond M&Ms, peanut butter M&Ms, and regular M&Ms, all amazing. And also, I can't fucking eat anymore. And everyone, Skittles and Starburst, really? Are the first things to go. I think like this new generation likes their tart candy or the sour candy, and good for them. So I just know next time I'm going to buy less M&Ms, more Skittles, and also Kit Kats and Reese's. Those things went like crazy. And Hershey's chocolate bars.
Really?
Little Hershey's chocolate bars. Yeah, those flew off the plates. We bought about, I can't do math right now, but probably 144 candy bars, and I only have like 20 left.
Excellent.
Mondo, you know who was flexing about having full-size candy bars on Instagram?
Who?
Adam Green.
Good for dude. Adam Green is a man, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
If you're a fucking rich celebrity, you're not handing out full size candy bars. Like, you should be handing out full size candy bars and puppies.
Giving out girls.
when we were out yesterday, someone was handing out packaged prunes.
Did you ever go to the house? They put like some change in your bags.
No,
fuck is this?
we did put out one bowl for made like a whole display that we left out when we were trick or treating, and we had one was a big bowl of candy, the other one was like little bags of like toys for like kids with allergies or just
that's okay. That's totally fine, or like, you know, whatever. Or especially cool. You know, you have some kids like my nephew is autistic and nonverbal, and he loves any toy that you can press little buttons in and they pop.
Yeah,
I forgot they call those. Like, if you had those as an option, like, he definitely like, fuck the candy, I want that, and that'd be that's cool, that's awesome.
What's really funny though is there's a church at the end of my street, and there I did like the Hallelujah Night festival every Halloween, which is like the anti-Halloween.
It's the King of the Hill episode where they cancel Halloween. And actually the only King of the Hill Halloween episode, by the way.
But what's funny is that all the people that went to that event stopped at our house to do actual trick-or-treating.
You know, I get that. You know, Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate any holidays. Even your birthday is considered not a holiday. I get that some religions are against it, but like at this point, it's like no one's like, it's not about, it's not the Samhain anymore. Like no one's, it's not All Hallows Eve. No one's, it's not All Purgis Noctis. I mean, in April,
all the kids were dressed up, but they're all handing out candy at the event. So it's pretty much everything but.
I've seen the post going around this year. Like, we know your Hallelujah Night or Harvest Fest or whatever you want to call it, Fall Fest, Trunk or Treat. It's Halloween party. Like, that's what it is. Like, you can call it whatever you want, but that's what it is.
We did have a bounce house, so I'll give them that.
That's cool. I'll rescind my comment that it does aside. Yeah, they're just having a Halloween and calling it something different. That's cool. As long as you're giving a place for kids to have fun at.
Right. It was just funny that they're all like coming by our place for like, we want the good stuff.
but I am feeling very down today. Just I already miss Halloween. I already miss the season. And
but we're spooky. It's always bittersweet.
Yeah, we do stay in the Halloween spirit year round, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not the rest of the world.
I think we do, but I think the beauty of the Halloween experience is that everyone kind of like that's when like your normie friends come out and start talking about horror movies, mm-hmm. and you see more people going to see movies. Like last week when I saw the Phantasm screening, there were so Don Coscarelli goes up front and he says, "Hey, how many people have never seen it on the big screen? Like probably 90% of the auditorium with 400 people in it. I think it was 400 people. I don't know. They filled the whole theater. They sold it out though. All raised their hand. You know, most of us raised their hand. And they said, who is about to have a first time watch? And at least probably 40% of the people is a first time watch. And I thought that was awesome. And then I haven't told you yet, Jason, but I got there a little bit too late for the book signing and there's already a line. I'm like, I want to get a good seat. It's fine. I already have a Don Coscarelli autographed Phantasm poster and all that. And so the movie starts. I'm sitting kind of towards the end. I'm by myself. There's one seat next to me. And Don walks over and goes, "Hey, can I sit here?" I'm like, "Yeah, yes, you definitely can sit here." And then like now I'm self-conscious thinking, I hope like I laugh at the right parts. And he giggled through the entire movie. Like he laughed at so much inappropriate stuff that I laughed at too. And you could just tell he's having a good time just watching his movie back with the theater and laughing at things and told a lot of great stories afterwards in the Q&A too. So that was, a really, really cool experience. So if anybody gets a chance to meet Don Coscarelli, what a nice guy. And what a really cool experience that was. He was legit flattered. And I had to leave a few minutes early because I had an obligation and ended up going long. But someone said afterwards, even like he stood around the lobby if people wanted to meet him and met more people and they didn't have to do that. So it was cool seeing that people who'd never seen a Phantasm movie coming out for a Phantasm movie. I feel like that stuff only happens around Halloween. Like that wouldn't happen if you did that event in June.
I mean, every now and then you get, horror people, horror people like us who, try to do gatekeeping around Halloween. Like, I'm spooky all year long, blah, blah, blah. I love it because this is the time that people ask me for recommendations. This is the time when people are like, so what should I watch? And I'm like, oh boy, how deep do we want to go? I'm ready for it.
This is how you test, like, do I not want them to talk to me ever again? Because if so, have you ever seen a movie called Cannibal Ferox?
Test my friendships here.
I know I always have to ask that question.
Horror comedy called Funny Games.
It's hilarious. It's not fucking depressing at all. Oh god, I think it's fun though. I think it's fun though when you have those the normie friends, especially coworkers, that'll be like, "We want to watch a horror movie tonight. What should we watch?" I'm like, "What horror movies do you like now?" Before I recommend something, and I usually recommend a classic they haven't seen before.
Yeah, get like a baseline of what they've seen before, what they're into, or what they're open to. All right. Well, we've taken a couple of weeks off to do some more current movies that came out, and those are really fun. But now we're kind of barreling to the end of our Tales from the Crypt watch through. In fact, after tonight's episode, we only have 4 more left in the entire series, if you can believe it.
It's crazy.
But we promise Dads from the Crypt will go on. There's plenty more anthology TV shows and movies to cover. And we'll have some exciting guests as always lined up. But we will take a moment, first of all, to thank all of our listeners, but also ask you to do us a favor and go on the Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating review. It really does help. Subscribing to our YouTube channel if you haven't checked that out. Actually, I just released a video I made visiting some of the Halloween filming locations nearby. It was really fun.
And if you watch it on YouTube, it's unedited. So you get to see all the fuck-ups I cut out of this audio podcast you're listening to. You get to see all the ridiculous stuff that happens.
Before so the show.
Jason hit record, he's posting it.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes. When the audio version that gets put out on the podcasting provider, as Mono does all this fancy editing and everything.
I don't always do fancy editing. I try to do fancy editing when I have time. Unfortunately, because I don't get paid to do this, not anything wrong with that. Well, it's sometimes it's a back burner to real life, and I have to just run some filters so it sounds okay and hope that we didn't say anything that'll get us canceled. Not that we would anyway, but you never know.
But for the YouTube versions, unless it's something really egregious, I just put it out as is. I just chop off the beginning, chop off the end.
I now want Jason to like have a list of all the stuff he's had to cut out of episodes.
I can't really, unless there's like a technical issue, I don't think I've cut out anything. So Well, but yeah, go check out our YouTube channel. Give it a like and subscribe. We really appreciate that. And also maybe tell a friend about the show, all those normies that you talk to that like are looking for a new podcast.
Thinking out loud now that we're 116 episodes in, I think our infamous origin episode in which the Golden Knights got beat by a Canadian team, and I'm pretty sure I offended everyone in Canada. I cut out like 40% of that podcast, I think, when I released it.
That was before we did YouTube. So.
Well, and also, it was so new that we were so new that I think I was worried about an off-color joke and someone not. I think now that people who listen to this probably know us well enough. Anyone subscribed to our Patreon probably knows us well enough, know where our convictions lie. But I think we should I think we should release the unedited version of that for our Patreon subscribers.
Maybe on Patreon, yes.
Only on Patreon. So if you guys are hearing this right now and you're like, should I get their Patreon? You might be able to hear the most off the rails episode we've done, which is saying some shit.
But though, I don't think we'll ever release our chopping mall. Watch along.
That one I deleted the file, like immediately deleted the file.
I think I have a backup somewhere.
I disclose my net worth and how much money I make a year, and so did Tommy. Yeah,
we start going places.
Like it got weird. It went some weird places. We should do, thinking out loud again, we should do another watch and chat though.
I just didn't realize how hard it would be to watch a movie and chat and like that, especially a movie I haven't seen because I'm a very active listener watcher of movies. So I realized how hard it would be to do that and record at the same time. It was like trying to do, tap your head.
We don't record the next one. It's just we watch it with our Patreon friends, and they want to watch it and jump in, and we'll
do some stuff in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell a friend about the show. It all helps out. We appreciate everything.
Well, while you're checking out all the social media, if you have series or movies or anything like that you want us to cover, drop a line. Let us know.
Yeah.
Email us, Twitter, X, whatever.
We do, and we put out quite a few polls to our Patreons about things like that. So if you really want to have a direct voice, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even at the $1 tier, that just gets you in the door.
Yeah, we're all ears right now. And it's, we have some ideas lined. We have some ideas what we want to do after we're done with Tales from the Crypt. But like, you know what? Like someone might have a crazy suggestion for something. We're like, that's what we're doing. Yep. So,
yeah. All right. But tonight, we're traveling back to June 21st, 1996 to talk about season 7, episode 9, Smoke Rings. Rings, W-R-I-N-G-S. Jody, give us a plot synopsis.
All right. So I'm going off the top again this time, because this time I just wanted, it's been a while since we've done a Tales episode. I didn't want to be sitting there with a notepad taking notes the whole time. And so I just wanted to watch it and absorb it. So I'm probably going to miss stuff because that's what I do when I don't write it all down. But we start at an ad agency. I'm already struggling. Daniel Craig comes in. I don't remember his character's name. Barry. His name is Barry. And Barry basically applies for this job having no experience, nothing really, credentials, anything like that. He's an ex-con, and he's gotten out of prison, and he basically gets a job just based on vibes alone, I think. Like, I guess she just decides, okay, sure. And as we see in the rest of this episode, there is a reason. We'll get to that. But he gets this job and immediately starts shooting down some of his coworkers' ideas, saying they're too boring. And his boss's name is Jacqueline. Let's see what you can actually do. Like, you're great at being the guy who tells the other guy that his ideas are bad. What are your ideas? That's when we find out that Barry is actually in league with her former business partner, who is kind of running this whole scam behind the scenes.
Who basically lives with Freddy Krueger in the boiler room.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, he's like down in a sewer, like the Ninja
Turtles. Him and Freddy Krueger are roommates.
Yeah. But he says he's got this little device, this little machine that, it basically makes you desire things, right? I was never 100% clear what the device did.
It makes them open to any suggestion, kind of.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why later, what I'm sure I'll get to, is when like he showed them condoms, like, oh, we have to do this right now because
they're open to
the suggestion.
Yeah, he takes the device and he makes a presentation to his boss, showing these really boring pictures just like of a mountainscape with the company name underneath, but he's using that device at the same time. So no matter what it is that he's trying to sell, it works like instantly. The coworker and the boss, Mato just said, it shows, it says condoms underneath, and they immediately start like making out on the couch. So this is very effective.
Well, very, Jackie makes out with Frank.
Yes, yes, yes. Not Barry.
Frank is kind of the stalwart, the old marketing guy, and right. He's mad at Barry because Barry's just shitting on all of his ideas, as he should be. Like, man, what a dick. I just get a job on day one, like shitting on someone's ideas in front of their boss. Fuck you.
I hate those people at work. They don't having their own ideas and just keep talking about terrible losses.
And they also do a very flirtatious relationship, obviously, because she invites him over and yanks him back by the hair. And I'm like, yeah, like I wouldn't have said no to that. I was like, okay, this is getting good.
Now, I do miss the days, though, when you could get hired and just go into a place and be like, hey, I want to work here. And they're like, I don't know. And you say, yeah, but why not? And they say, okay. Like, that's not how it works.
Oh, now back in the 60s, oh, you're a white man. Yeah, you can be a scientist. Like,
sure.
Who gives a fuck?
Put on this white lab coat. Now you're a scientist.
You're a doctor.
Of thugonomics.
But anyway, so they then make a little test run of this out on the streets, and people are wanting the chocolate that they're trying to sell for this campaign, and the client is very excited about what's happening, and so Frank gets fired, and Barry gets in charge of this account. Then I think at this point is when Barry and Jacqueline start having a little bit of a relationship of their own and getting flirtatious with each other. And the next step in the plan, though, is to take this device and influence Frank to kill Jacqueline. But for whatever reason, it's not working. Now, we do find out that you can't make someone do something they don't want to do. It just enhances what they already want. And so for whatever reason, he can't get it to work right with Frank. And so Barry himself kills Jacqueline. And he goes back to the boiler room, sewer, or whatever. And tells, I think I'm saying the wrong names on all this.
No, you're good. Nope,
you got Fakir. It. You nailed this.
Fakir?
Yeah.
Okay. He tells Fakir, the former partner, that he's going to frame him for the murder now. He's going to get away with it. He likes the advertising job. He wants to stay with it. Fakir will go to jail. But that's when Frank shows up. And Frank says, no, you're going to go to jail because you're the one who did it. And starts messing with Barry by using the machine on him. And eventually, Barry is driven crazy, ends up jumping out of a window because of the suggestions and all the things that are happening.
Well, yeah, and he sees the police are closing in on him.
Right, the police are closing in. And that's when we find out this whole thing has been a setup the entire time, which I have some questions about. But Jacqueline shows back up. She's not dead. Frank's working with her. Fakir's working with them, and even the client. This was all a presentation for the client. Barry was never hired because they actually wanted him to work there. He was just the scapegoat that they could use to show that this thing really would work on influencing people.
Yeah, to see how far it go, because the one that Barry was using made like a noise, a buzzing noise. Right. But but that was an intentional noise. They have a silent version that they were using on him without him knowing about it.
Did either of you guys hear that noise and pause the TV and have to look around and make sure that shit wasn't coming from your house?
Oh yeah. No, that's the kind of sound I hear. And I start like testing all the light bulbs.
Yes,
the light bulbs start making
I need to replace my refrigerator. Like, what is happening?
I did forget though, to mention what the Crypt Keeper was doing in this one. We get the Godfather Crypt Keeper doing his best Marlon Brando the entire time. So that's fun stuff.
Dude, the Marlon Brando impersonation was so bad.
Yeah.
But perfect for the character.
Right.
Yes, 100%.
I'm almost surprised it took them 7 seasons to do a Godfather parody.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it. They Daniel Craig's character is dead at the end, and everyone else has been in on it the whole time. And when I say I have questions, though, was Barry so influenced that he thought he murdered somebody who he didn't? Because he was covered in blood. See, this is where I'm having some confusion about it. Barry,
okay. Hold on a second. I think did he kill Fakir? I think he killed Fakir. That's why he was covered in blood.
No, he came to Fakir. He killed Jacqueline.
That Fakir guy's kind of a fucker.
Yeah. But yeah, no, he killed Jacqueline instead of getting Frank to do it. And he came down to Fakir's dungeon covered in blood.
Oh, saying it's done. That's right. That's right.
Saying it's done. But then Jacqueline's there just fine at the end. So where did blood come from?
Here's my thing with this episode. Yeah, if you think about it too much.
I didn't even think about it too much. Like, that was pretty quick going.
I didn't think about that at all. Like, I'm not putting it together. What are you going to do?
But with this cast, it's just you can't. The cast is so good that you just watch them do anything.
Oh, yeah. No, I we'll get to it in a minute, but I overall enjoyed this episode. I just, that was a pretty weird moment. Like, I got a little confused by the end, really, is what I'm saying.
It's also one of those episodes, too. And this, I'm fine with this, but we're like, the plan has to go perfectly.
Right.
It's like jigsaw levels of
manipulation.
But yeah, it's such the cast, Daniel Craig, young Daniel Craig, his eyes are just so piercing and he's just like so this magnetic. This is what,
10 years before he became Bond, right?
Yeah, at least, yeah.
So he's just, baby Daniel Craig.
Yeah, so he's just like so captivating in this, I thought. I hadn't seen him in anything, pretty much. I actually saw him in Munich was the first movie I remember seeing him. Even that was like 10 years after this.
Mm-hmm. And so, not a knock at all about any of the other actors, but he was definitely the best actor on that set. I mean, he was.
Oh, well, let's not forget Dennis Lawson, who plays Frank, fucking Red 2/Wedge from Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Wedge also appears in every Final Fantasy game.
What's up?
So in every Final Fantasy game, you'll find characters Vix and Wedge. They're two of the pilots in Star Wars.
Which is even more interesting because he is the uncle of Ewan McGregor, who was in just a couple episodes ago.
Real fast, there's a fucking fly in my room, so you see me randomly grab at the camera. It's good. I'm going to catch this fucker. I'm going to smush it in my hand, and then I'm going to be very disappointed at life.
I like the cast actually quite a bit.
Yeah, that was a good cast.
And also very interesting, I didn't realize this, but this is directed by a woman named Mandy Fletcher, who did a lot of the British TV. She's most known for the absolutely fabulous The Movie. But this is the second woman to ever direct a Tales from the Crypt episode. The first being Mary Lambert in the first season.
That's kind of depressing.
Like, we're 7 seasons in, man.
Yeah,
can we have tell about that one?
Until this, I thought Mary was the only one. So I'm like, wow, we just doubled in the amounts.
Jeez.
Progress.
Hey,
Manda, what did you think of this episode?
I actually like this episode. I wasn't expecting much when it first started, so I was like, God damn, it's going to be those whodunit episodes. Mm-hmm. And it kind of was, but I really like the supernatural, not the supernatural, but the mind control slant to it. And then how these people were so nefarious. Plus Jacqueline's like a very, very aggressive lover. And I like that too. So I was definitely a fan. I know what I like. And if you're going to come to my house, you better at least slap me and choke me. I don't know. But
or jiu-jitsu or?
No, that's well, they're both kind of recreational. but in one, you're choking someone or being choked with the intent, and their intent is to murder you. They wouldn't actually murder you, but their intent, but that's what a strangulation is. But I think like when you're doing it for other recreational purposes, the goal is to cut off the air so your orgasm is better. It's much different. Oh, but the trick is
this episode needed. We needed a technical explanation for how this works.
Well, but the trick is much like in jiu-jitsu, you don't want to push someone's Adam's apple in, right? Their fucking throat in their esophagus, because that can kill them. It doesn't take a whole lot of pressure to actually to break that their esophagus. So even when you're ever trying to choke someone for fun or for defense, blood choke, you always block the arteries off, because that just stops the flow of blood to the brain.
There you go.
It's for the record.
Jordy, what do you think of this episode?
I'm on a list.
Just moving on.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like I said, I had some confusion near the end about some plot points, and I still don't know exactly how it all worked. But like overall, the whole mind control thing, I do appreciate that they threw in the little, you can't do anything you don't want to. So it didn't seem creepy, because like the moment that Barry hooks up with his boss, he's using the thing, but she's into it. if that makes any sense. Like, it's not, I remember like some like HBO type stuff, like late night stuff where people would have like, look, a remote that changes people's moods. That's real creepy in 2023, you know?
Or like the love potion episode where it's like, fall in love, who like don't want to be in love.
Yeah.
That's
there's like a seed, or like him wanting to kill her. There's like, you know, there was a seed of desire of him wanting to do that thing.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think if you're allergic to peanut butter, you can't make someone eat a spoonful of peanut butter.
So I did appreciate that because it kept it from being creepy with the whole, like, you know, mind control part of it. But I mean, really what made this episode more than anything else was just Daniel Craig. Like the moment he appeared on screen, like, I was in for everything else that happened. He's such a good actor. He's got this energy to him in this, you know, kind of this scrappy, like, I'm trying to survive. I don't want to go back to jail. And I found something that, you know, he thinks he's good at. So there's this kind of nervous energy to him the whole time, but also he's very confident. I thought he was great in this, and it really made the episode.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't knocking Dennis Lawson or I'm not going to try to pronounce Jacqueline's actress's name, so I'm going to butcher it. Ute Lemper?
Something like that.
And I apologize. I just don't know what that is. But I just thought Daniel Craig, though, was just, you could already see his acting chops were fantastic.
And he's got that star quality.
Yeah. This is a well-directed episode, too. There's some good shots.
Yeah, I agree.
When they go into the advertising agency, there's a kind of like a cool craning shot that goes up. I always like that, and they add a little flair.
And in 25 minutes, it doesn't feel like he was ever wasting any of that time. Mm-hmm. Like, it utilized all that time. I feel like sometimes we'll watch some Tales from the Crypt episodes and we'll say, man, like, I wish that was 5 minutes longer to give me this much more exposition or whatever I needed. Or sometimes you watch them and say, that could have been 5 minutes shorter. I thought this was a really good use of the time, a really good, just, you know, closed up story by the end of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Aside from Jody's complaints about not, and now, which I'm very confused on, I'm going to have to watch this episode again.
I mean, I really needed like 5 seconds just for somebody to go, he was covered in blood because it was fake and we tricked his mind or something like that. I don't know. Just something to explain how he got covered in blood, but nobody died.
Oh, you could even have her come in with like one of those like movie, like blood packets.
Yeah, on sure. Chest. Yeah. Just something to show how that part happened. I was confused.
You being like, oh, ketchup.
Yeah.
What was I going to say?
You don't know.
Yeah. Only also, like, we're at a point with Daniel Craig now. I keep thinking of his Knives Out voice.
Too. Oh, yeah. Benoit Blanc.
I'm having trouble discerning his characters. But
that's another movie I've never seen. And I want to watch it. And
what's like funny is,
I thought about this the other night because a acquaintance of mine, I'm going to call him an acquaintance now, was friend, now acquaintance, because they recommended a like an exploitation flick called Savage Vengeance that SRS Cinema put out. So I ordered it. Cool. Never ordered the DVD. I'm back into physical media. And it was probably one of the worst 70 minutes I've ever seen on film. Mm-hmm. Fucking terrible. And all I could think about was, I don't know why it popped in my head. Like, I could have used that time to watch Knives Out and probably had a much better.
I like the second one too, but I think the first one's much, I mean, I do think the first one's much better.
Did they make a spinoff or something like that?
The sequel.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And it's good. I like that one quite a bit, but I still think the original Knives Out is just fantastic. Like, not a wasted moment in the whole thing.
Yeah. Nice. The second one just veers more towards like blatant comedy at times.
Yeah.
The first one just keeps it pretty serious, but in the fun way. But yeah, so I guess we say we're big Daniel Craig fans. Again, Munich is a great movie, and he's really good at that
too. Munich's very, very good.
Love his character in that movie. All right, Jody, let's talk about the comic.
Okay, so this comic is very different. It's got some similar themes, but it is definitely not the same thing. It came from, let me pull up my notes here. I do have some notes, just not all the notes. Which tab? This is also good podcasting. We're doing great today.
Yeah, it's
you can tell I've been off for a little bit.
Yeah, we haven't recorded in like 2 weeks, so I think we're just kind of
get back into it. Yeah, we're good. Okay, this was written by Al Feldstein. It pencils and ink by Reed Crandall. It comes from Vault of Horror number 34. Okay. Vault of Horror number 34. 19. My numbers are all messed up here. I don't know. It comes from the 50s because that's where all these come from.
Somewhere around there, it's got to be.
sometime from the 50s. This is fantastic.
Let's start over. Can we start over? Is this
all right, round two? Canyon. All right. So in this one, we have a man who goes to an advertising agency. He's kind of a little nerd guy, Mr. Tillings. And Mr. Tillings has this fantastic idea that he's come up with. He's made this invention to advertise cigarettes because it's the 50s. And so they're going to put up a big billboard. And he talks to the woman in charge of everything to explain his idea. They're going to put up this billboard. And behind it is going to be a huge tank of water that comes to a boil and makes rings of steam come out of the billboard right where the man's mouth is. So there's going to be a man sitting around looking like a sex doll with his mouth in an O shape all the time, blowing out rings of smoke. Yeah. I mean, I just thought the billboard has to actually look at.
There was a Beavis and Butthead episode where I still very vividly remember they were looking at sex dolls at a sex shop. Uh-huh. And again, this is only for our video watchers. And Buddy goes, why are all their faces going?
I just have to think that's what that billboard has to look like, because this guy's going to be standing around with his mouth making a perfect circle all the time. He's going to look like a blow up doll. But anyway,
what's his name got an idea for his band, a perfect circle from the mouth of a blow up doll.
But anyway, so he has this, and he brings this idea to her, and she says, I will talk to the company and see what I can do. And really, secretly, behind the scenes, she is taking credit for his idea and implementing it and building this whole thing. And but she's also dating him at the same time to continue to keep him busy. Once the billboard is actually built, she says, you know, I want to surprise you with this. And he wants to know how much money he gets to make off of it. And she won't answer that question because there's no money for him, because he gets pushed into the big vat of boiling water and cooked alive. But right after that, I mean, literally, it looks like, you know, 5 minutes afterwards, she walks out in front of an audience who came to see the billboard. And she's standing right beside it, and it blows out its steam smoke ring, and it kind of drifts for a minute. And then the steam comes down and gets right on top of her. We're talking, you know, over 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And she basically cooks right there in front of everybody with the steam. So, again, advertisements gone evil, but not at all the same type of advertisement or how it works. I thought it was a fun comic. I really enjoyed the comic.
I really like that one.
It was a really nice twist.
I like the artwork. It was a nice twist. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
And for anyone also not watching on YouTube, you can see my dogs. My dog came in my room. So,
yeah, there you go.
What in the hell just happened? I just
hit a cord. Like, I have a little light perched up here for, you know, our YouTube audience, and my foot hit the cord, and the light fell and just tumbled behind my old CRT TV. We're gonna leave that there. It's going to be a little darker today because I'm not going to mess with anything. I'm having trouble
tonight. Like, is there a tornado warning there in Tennessee? Shit's happening right now. Like, if you're recording a podcast in the middle of a tornado, like, God damn your dedication.
No, I'm knocking stuff over. If you're hearing creaks, I broke my desk chair like 3 days ago. And so I'm in this crappy old broken chair. New one coming this week.
Hold on a second. What kind of desk chair did you buy?
Nothing super fancy this time. I'm going with something a little more simple that my kids won't break so fast. Sometimes all of the bells and whistles are just things to break. So a little simpler.
I'm just saying, I love this autonomous chair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I sent you a link to it, but fuck, man, the price is over $100 more than it was when I bought it during pandemic.
Yeah. Desk chairs are one of those things that the moment you start looking at them, you're like, oh, everything is expensive. Unless you get, you know, cheaper stuff that isn't as fancy.
You can get some decent deals on Amazon. Plus, we have something here called Nellis Auction House. I've been looking for an office chair on that only because I'm just going to buy a new one for my physical office, unless I get laid off, which is I won't need one. But for my office, because we just have shitty chairs.
I get it.
Can we just go back to the idea of cigarette commercials and cigarette advertisements? Jody, I was looking at that thing you sent me that was like 6 hours of like commercials and trailers and stuff that was like emulating the drive-in. And like one of the first things that came up was like an old Australian cigarette commercial. I think it's like, I don't know if it's Steve McQueen or some guy that was like Steve McQueen. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it's like in front of an
orchestra. Everybody knows who Steve McQueen is. Like, so please.
No, I don't think it was Steve. It was a guy like that reminded me a lot of Steve McQueen. Yeah. I don't remember who he was. And then like he's smoking a cigarette in front of like an orchestra playing. He's like wearing a tuxedo trying to make it look cool. And I was like, oh, that was a time.
And also, my favorite smoking ad is the one with Fred and Barney from the Flintstones sitting there advertising cigarettes.
Isn't it crazy? And to think when we were young, even Joe Camel and the Marlboro Man were household names. Like everyone knew Joe Camel, the smoking camel. Like, holy shit. And you look at that and like, oh, they were targeting the children.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Damn. And there's a great Saturday Night Live skit about smoking. I think it's one of those old Phil Hartman ones. And where basically he comes in the office, he goes, did you get your lungs checked out? He goes, yeah, they say it's cancer. And he's there smoking while he says that. It's in the 50s or 40s. He goes, what could it cause? He goes, I don't know. He goes, he said it wasn't the cigarettes.
Oh, brother. All right, let's do our episode rating. Jody, what do you give this episode?
I'm going to say 3.5. It's a good, enjoyable episode. There's some unanswered questions for me. Most of that comes from Daniel Craig, though. Daniel Craig's 3 out of 3.5 of the points on this one.
All right, Mondo.
See, I would have been out of 3, but I'm a fan of Jacqueline and a fan of the way she handles business. So 3.5.
I'm right in line with you guys. 3.5. The Daniel Craig factor just really makes it very watchable. It's one of those ones where if you like shuffled the cast and took him out with and just put someone not as magnetic as he is, it would be not the best episode, but
yeah,
sometimes the performance really is what makes it.
I mean, that's a lot of good television, right? And good movies. Yeah, exactly. It's sometimes you're given a not so great script and you knock out of the park and people love it. Other times you make the Nightmare on Elm Street remake and get someone like Jackie Earle Haley, who's an amazing actor, and give him the dirt worst to work with. And I bet he still elevated it, but you know, I would have loved this. Yes. I wonder if you can get that script online to the Nightmare on Elm Street remake to see how much Jackie Earle Haley changed in it to make it less terrible. I'm just saying.
Nah. It's still terrible though.
Oh, it's terrible. And it's one of those movies that had some really cool. I think the worst part about it is, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, of all of his old 80s and 90s franchises, is prime for a remake with all like the advantages in computer graphics you have now for those realistic dreamscapes. And I think the last season of Stranger Things, the brothers that did that series, I still think all they're doing was basically making a promo reel for why they should do the Nightmare on Elm Street movie, because it was like, that's all. I was like, oh god, I want that. And to take that opportunity and to squander it, like Platinum Dunes did. Was it Platinum Dunes?
Yeah, and that was like the last, because they were doing all the remakes. I was the one that really put the nail in the coffin.
But Jackie Earle Haley, the way he acted, I thought acted Freddie very, very well, very dark. And the way he had his monotone kind of voice but God, did they give them nothing to work with? And the idea of micro naps, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah. But the whole, almost the entire movie is just like copy and paste.
Dude, the whole fucking story of that movie is parents telling their kids, look, sorry, this guy was a fucking child molester and did bad things, you guys. And them saying, you're lying, we're going to prove his innocence. I'm like, that's some like reverse Sideshow Bob Bart Simpson shit there. That'd be like a Bart Simpson who's trying to prove Sideshow Bob's innocent. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
All right. Sorry. Well, let's kick it over to our Uncle Al for a word.
Hi, it's Alan. Smoke Rings was the very last episode of Crypt that we shot in London. It was the very last episode we shot, period. Yeah, there was the animated Three Little Pigs thing, but that was off to the side. Did I even write a Crypt Keeper segment for it? I honestly don't remember. Gil and I were supposed to write that last episode, but by the end of season 7, we'd used every comic worth using, and I was running on fumes. I gave the writing slot and the story I dabbled with to my assistant Lisa. The script's deficiencies aren't her fault, they're mine. I was supposed to direct that episode, too. I finally had enough leverage after all those seasons doing the show to demand a directing slot for myself in that last contract, and the Crip partners gave it to me. But alas, I didn't take it, because I couldn't write a script I cared about. In hindsight, that was stupider than stupid. When life hands you a directing slot on a popular show, you change how you're thinking about the show, and you take the shot being offered you. You don't do what I did. The script was mediocre, my fault, which made getting a director that wasn't me that much more difficult. At the last minute, we hired Mandy Fletcher, who we all liked for her work on the Blackadder series. As for hiring a young unknown actor named Daniel Craig, well, he was young and unknown. His name meant nothing. We had no idea he'd become Craig, Daniel Craig. Can I tell you a secret? I didn't even know we'd hired Daniel Craig for Crypt until someone pointed it out to me years after he'd become James Bond. Really, I said? We hired Daniel Craig in England? I looked it up. Apparently we did. For what it's worth, another of the characters auditioning at the top of the episode is an actress named Helen Nasilski. That's my wife. It was her second appearance in an episode of Tales from the Crypt. Her first appearance was in the What's Cookin' episode alongside Jeanette Lewis Adler, Gil's wife. By the time Smoke Rings was finished, so were we. It was definitely time to go home. I thought the Crypt Partners' upcoming EC-based sci-fi series was in my future. It wasn't. The rest of the Crypt team would go on to make Perversions of Science without me. I had no idea as we all flew back to L.A. and home that things were about to change for me. Completely. I'd say see you next time, but this is it. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. All right, Mondo, give us your song of the day.
All right, I'm going to get sentimental for one of two times on this episode. The second one's going to be during dad advice. I have some dad advice. But not really dad advice, a statement. But so this weekend, this past Sunday, my daughter and I drove out to California to go see one of our mutual favorite artists and one of our my favorite artists in the world, Amigo the Devil. And we saw him in Jason's backyard at the Wiltern in Los Angeles. Jason didn't want to go.
But I was like, I don't want to see him on there.
He did. Definitely didn't want to see me.
Tell me you're coming to like you're on the road.
Well, again,
even then, you're like, no, you're not invited.
I didn't. You weren't. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you.
I'm kidding.
You know, it's how rare is it that you get to go on a road trip with your adult daughter and go see a band you love and have a great time? No, my time was dedicated. Yeah. The reason I really didn't tell anybody is my time was dedicated to her and I don't want people to think I was blowing them off. But I had a great weekend, you know, and just like anytime you get to spend with your children like that is just like embrace those moments when they're young because they'll become further, they'll be further and between as you get older. But we had a great time and really bonded and had some good food and got to stand right up front. Like if you go to his Instagram page and you watch his video recap of that show, you can see us right up front just having a good time and singing along. And but this is going to tie in later to what I kind of want to talk a little bit about in dad advice, or at least have a statement about in dad advice, is that there's a song he wrote, and every now and again I'm sure you've heard a song and you've heard a lyric in there that just kind of like broke you, right? Like you heard that lyric, you're like, holy shit, like this person get into my brain and pull this out. And the song is called Everyone Gets Left Behind off the album Everything Is Fine by Amigo the Devil. And just the reason why I love this song so much is the whole song is great. I have a lot of great lines. He has one that says basically talking about when he was young. And he goes, and we learn that the worst of the world is in people we love. And growing up in a household with verbally and emotionally abusive parents who are drug addicts, that's like just kind of, man, like that hit me really, really hard. Cause I was like, yeah, like even the good times were even the every terrible fucking memory I have in childhood was thanks to people that I loved that should have been there for me. And that's what I love about Amigo the Devil is he like all of his lyrics are just fucking hit home really hard in some places like that. And I implore everybody, like I know I give a lot of metal recommendations. Amigo the Devil is folk. It's far from metal, but yet he does whatever he wants to do, which makes it kind of metal as fuck. And which is cool. And then they had a couple openers too, the Silent Comedy. they had this guy who played mandolin, guitar, bass, and banjo, and made me want to just come home and burn all my instruments. I'm like, holy shit, this guy is great. They were great. And then Nate Bergman opened up, and you see this guy come on stage that looks like he would be if Dale and Brennan from Step Brothers had a baby, John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell. And then he sings, and you hear this voice come out of him that's like, oh my God. And especially when you hear that in a live setting. And then also Daniel Rodriguez, who was a second singer-songwriter that played, and all just fantastic, fantastic artists. So I would say check out all of them. Again, all non-metal, all, I would say, pretty accessible. And it's cool to know that the first time I saw Amigo the Devil was at a tiny little bar here called the Beauty Bar. And he played out back because when they were open, they had a lot backstage, and there's maybe 30 people, maybe 50 at most here. And then here he is selling out the Wiltern in Los Angeles, which is probably a few thousand people maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's really just cool to see. Like, of course, you kind of want to, again, my daughter's always like, I want to gatekeep this. And then we went to the show and she had such a good time, and like everyone's just singing along and the vibe is just the way it should be. And she was like, I don't want to gatekeep this anymore. Like, I want everyone to fucking know about this. And which is cool. So song of the week, Everyone Gets Left Behind by Amigo the Devil, off the album Everything Is Fine. And we can kind of say in this episode, Barry kind of gets left behind.
Yeah.
On top of a car at the bottom of a building.
All right, Jody, this was some horror news.
All right. So right now I am in the middle of missing something because Terrifier 2 came back to theaters today for like a 1-day show. And I was very close to going to check it out. Jody,
I think a lot. Some places are showing it tomorrow as well.
OK.
If I wasn't going to a hockey game, I'd go tomorrow. But
yeah. But Terrifier 2 is doing a limited theater run right now. But the big news with that, in addition to getting to see Terrifier 2, is you get an exclusive trailer for Terrifier 3, which that's part of the reason I wanted to go tonight. But we do know a little bit about what's going on in that trailer, mainly the fact that the next Terrifier movie is going to be a Christmas movie.
Goosebumps.
Very excited about this.
Yes.
I love Christmas horror. It's one of my favorite weird subgenres. There's a picture floating around right now that's supposedly leaked from the trailer, probably released by the studios, but of Art the Clown with a full Santa Claus beard on. Yeah, I'm in. 100% in.
What I think happened is the artist that did the poster, and they're going to start selling the poster, posted it by accident before it hit, and people screenshot on his story and just went crazy with it. So, but hey, man, like, it's got
it's fun. Been confirmed now.
Yeah. Damon Leone was like, yeah, it's Christmas.
Yeah, the one I saw had like a skinned Santa face.
Yeah.
It was like hanging around. It was like a drawing of it was like a drawing rendering.
Right. Well, I think an actual photo, if those of y'all who are in the Slack group here, you can check that out. But there's actual photo floating around now of Art in Santa costume. Nice. Very excited about that. Other horror news. Five Nights at Freddy's just came out and broke multiple streaming records, despite the fact that it was a day and date release where it came out on Peacock and in theaters. It's already made $135 million in the first weekend it was open.
I think the largest horror theatrical release aside from It and It Chapter 2.
Yeah. So insane. It's huge. You know, I watched the movie. I enjoyed it, but it's definitely more of a gateway horror. But man, if you're a fan of that series, like my kids are, like every kid who's that age. And they absolutely loved it. Like there was so many little like lore pieces. Like it's actually a pretty deep story. When you get into, you know, I think there's 9 games now.
Oh, wow.
So there's all this accumulated lore. They've got books, they've got comics, and it incorporates a lot more than what, you know, a 40-year-old man who's never played the game is able to catch in the movie.
Will it scratch my Skeet Ulrich itch? Not Skeet. No, Matthew Lillard. Sorry, I get them mixed.
Oh yeah. You get some prime Lillard in there.
I thought you said my Skeet horror itch. I'm like, what fucking kind of horror are you watching, Jason? are you gonna show your kids Willy's Wonderland now?
Oh, we've watched it already.
Cool. Did they like that one?
Which would you say for an adult, like seasoned horror person?
For an adult, Willy's Wonderland definitely is a better movie.
Okay. And Willy's Wonderland, has a lot of mix. There's a lot of people that don't like that movie, but I thought it was just fun and had a great time.
Yeah, I enjoy.
Yeah, like for both of them, you know, don't take yourself too seriously and you'll have a good time with it, I think. But I could understand why somebody might not be into Five Nights at Freddy's. But either way, a lot of people are into it and it's making a ton of money. So good for them.
And one thing I noticed, this Halloween season, I guess, we didn't get a ton of like theatrical horror releases.
I mean, we had like, well, they all came kind of early because of the Taylor Swift kind of like came in the middle.
Yeah,
of
I get that like, though, but I think that, I think part of Five Nights is Freddy, and it was a PG-13?
Or PG-13, yeah.
And I think...
And it's a very accessible PG-13. I watched, awesome. My 7-year-old was sitting on the couch watching it with us, so, you know.
I think there's a market for more of that. And especially around this time, because people want a horror movie they can take their kids to, especially younger kids. Like, you might be able to take your teenagers to see Terrifier 2, but I wouldn't take your younger kids to see that. And but you know what I mean, though. There's a lot of, I think there's a lot, a big market for that. And it just shows like how much stronger those horror movies do during the Halloween, or the Halloween season. I was going to say the holiday season, because this is my holiday, but our holiday.
All right, other horror news. There's a movie that Mondo and I both saw at Chattanooga Film Fest this year, Onyx the Fortuitous and the Talisman of Souls, made by our good friend Andrew Bowser, a.k.a. Onyx the Fortuitous. It's going to be coming to Screenbox November 14th, so you just have a couple more weeks before you can check that out if you haven't caught it on the festival circuit.
Also, Phantom. Yeah, Phantom actually is releasing it widespread in theaters for one or two nights only.
Oh, nice.
So, and I would say this is one of those movies that benefits from a crowd. Like, I think seeing the Chattanooga Film Festival with this crowd that is just laughing at everything made it so much more fun. It's not going to be for everybody. No. I'm really not the biggest fan of Onyx's like web videos and whatnot, but I loved the movie and had an awesome time with it. Really fun practical effects. I think we're talking earlier about Ernest Scared Stupid at one point.
Yeah.
And the monsters kind of remind me of that in the best way possible.
No, it 100% is a, to me, an R-rated Ernest Scared Stupid.
Yeah.
Because
that might have been what you called it. You might have actually called that at the Chattanooga Film Festival. So
yeah, because your enjoyment is going to be largely influenced by how well you can tolerate the lead character. Like, if Onyx is funny to you, you're going to have a good time with it. Just the same way, if Ernest is funny to you, you're going to have a good time. If Ernest drives you crazy or Onyx drives you crazy and you find the character annoying, I don't know what to tell you. You got a whole hour and a half of a movie. So
real fast, let's not discount the people around him that also were fantastic. Yes. In that though.
Yeah. It's got a good cast. I think that's one of the things the movie really benefits from. In addition to just the Onyx character, you got Jeffrey Combs in a big role. You've got multiple other people who are really funny, really entertaining characters. So I think there's something in there for a lot of horror fans. All right, a couple other things. Clown in a Cornfield 3, Church of Frendo, a novel from Adam Caesar, I think is his name. Yeah, Adam Caesar. I've read the first two Clown in a Cornfield books. The third one is going to be coming out. They've got the cover art revealed if you want to look that up online. And it will be coming out August 20th, 2024. So, long way out still, but if you haven't read those books and you like slashers, they're kind of young adult, but they're fun. They're fun young adult slashers. I think one of my kids has read them. I read them, had a great time with them. My wife read them, had a good time with them.
I read the first one, thought it was super enjoyable, had a good time with
it. Yeah, it's a light popcorn-y type of book, and there's a lot of blood and good characters, so there's plenty to enjoy in it. I'm excited for a third one. All right, couple more things. A first look has been released for the movie Lisa Frankenstein.
Yes.
It's a retelling of Frankenstein where a girl in the 80s reanimates a Victorian corpse during a lightning storm and tries to make him into the man of her dreams using a broken tanning bed in her garage. It looks very pink. It looks very blue and colorful and 80s. It's got Cole Sprouse playing the Frankenstein character. And it's being directed by Zelda Williams, Robin Williams' daughter, written by Diablo Cody, who did Jennifer's Body. So lots of good talent behind that. And finally,
Hold on 1 second. There's an interesting deluge of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Spooks, we had Birth Rebirth and the Angry Black Girl and her monster. And I'm here for all of it.
Yeah, but I don't think that Birth Rebirth is really... I doubt they used Frankenstein for the inspiration on that one. But the Angry Black Girl and her monster definitely was Frankenstein's fire.
I listened to an interview with the director on The More Deadly with our friend Rachel in Ariel. And I think they did reference that that was like a... There are at least parts of it that were...
I'm sorry for questioning Jason. Won't happen again. I apologize. Like, damn it. He I had a different opinion than me and he had facts.
Well, I read in the podcast.
I'm an open-minded guy, and I'm to the left when it comes to politics. So I feel like I'm open-minded, and I can listen to someone that has facts I didn't know before and change my opinion on things.
Oh, good. Isn't that nice? A nice thing to be able to do with your life.
But no, I'm a big Frankenstein person, so I love it. Yeah. So keep it rolling.
And it looks like it's going to be fun, you know, with Diablo Cody writing it. It's going to have some good dialogue and fun moments, and you know, I'm happy to see Zelda Williams doing some stuff because anytime I hear anything about Robin Williams, it makes me sad. So I like to hear happy things from her family.
Have any of you guys watched 40-Year-Old Virgin? This is relevant.
15 years.
One of my favorite parts in the entire movie is they're doing speed dating and it's Seth Rogen and it's Paul Rudd's ex-girlfriend. He's like, I'm tired of you fucking with my friend and fucking being a bitch to him. And she goes, I blocked his number and he found my number. He's come to my house and all these rouse on all these creepy things he does. And Seth Rogen goes, well, that's new. Well, I did not know that. And I am sorry now. And I just love that scene because it's like, oh, he's like, oh, you have presented me with new information. And now I have to change my original opinion. And I apologize for the mean shit I said to you. You don't see it very often in life or in movies. Yes.
All right. Last piece of horror news. This episode will come out on November 5th. Also coming out on November 5th is the Treehouse of Horror 34. This year's Treehouse of Horror coming out after Halloween. It's happened a couple times.
In a row? Never mind.
I think it's 37.
It is, but I'm not going to remember that joke in 3 years from now.
Conversation. Mondo, I'm sorry I'm correcting you tonight.
Oh, Jason, have you seen the physical Clerks box set they're coming out with? And it looks like the fucking stopping. Oh, dude, it's awesome. I'll send you a link to it. Everyone should check it out. If you're a fan of Clerks, which I'll be honest, all three were good. Third one made me cry like a fucking baby.
Yeah.
And everyone should watch. I mean, whatever. Like, I actually think that the first one's probably the most inaccessible, where the new ones are, I think, more accessible.
We can go on the whole tangent on Clerks, but yeah, that's a very influential series to me.
We can do a Dads from Leonardo spinoff.
Jordy, are you going to talk about They Follow?
Oh, man, I forgot to write that one down. The thing I'm actually the most excited about, they just announced coming soon, it says. I don't know what that means, but a sequel to It Follows called They Follow. Same director, Micah Monroe, is coming back as the lead again. I loved It Follows. I still love It Follows. It's a fantastic movie, I think. And more of that, yes, just whatever. I want more.
I love It Follows, except for like the last maybe half hour or so. Like the last, the ending I thought was really messy, but I loved everything else. I love the whole concept.
It's the ending's just fine, Jason. You're just being an old grumpy curmudgeon.
Yeah, I'm an old grumpy man. But this is one of the movies I never thought we would get a sequel for.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Like, I think 9 years since It Follows came out. So I'd kind of figured it was one and done. But especially knowing that the original director's coming back and Micah Monroe is coming back in that lead role. Super excited about that. I remember the first time I watched that movie, because the thing can shapeshift, I felt like every scene I was like scanning the background, trying to figure out what was happening, what evil thing was out there. And it's just fantastic. I love when a horror movie engages you so much that you can't look away from the screen. And I feel like that was one of those movies for me. So I'm hoping for more of that in this sequel.
Yeah. A couple other things. Did you see Michael Dougherty is now saying that he has a great script for Trick or Treat 2?
The thing about that is he says that about every year.
Halloween, it pops up. So I'm just saying, like, fuck it, dude.
We're here for it.
I feel like rumors of a sequel to Trick or Treat have been coming out for as long as Trick or Treat's come out.
Yeah. Yeah, and but also in horror news is the excellent series 30 Coins on HBO is coming. Is just, well, by the time you hear this, the second season will have already been on streaming, or at least a couple episodes.
A couple episodes, yeah. I think the first two are out already.
And it's got Paul Giamatti in it, who's the best. And he has a movie coming up, not horror, called The Holdovers, with the director from Sideways, which Sideways is a fantastic film.
Yeah.
You guys haven't seen it. And so I'm really excited for that. For the one non-horror movie I'm really excited for, it's that one.
Where are we in Chucky season three?
We're at the mid-season break, I believe. I think we got maybe, I think it's five episodes in, I think.
Really? I think only three or four. I just caught up the other day. Okay. But the season has been awesome.
Okay. Yeah. That was my next question, because I caught up on season two. I haven't watched season three yet, but it is good still.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, this is one of those series that I have been constantly surprised by how good it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are four episodes out now, and I think they're taking a break for a few weeks. And there'll be more coming in 2024.
So my wife. Oh,
hold on. So we have to wait till next. Till.
Yeah, there's a mid-season break somewhere in the middle of it because of the writers and actors strike.
Oh, okay.
It kind of messed up the schedule a little bit.
And it is streaming in real time on Peacock. So the day the episode airs, the next day Peacock has it. So unlike last season, I think they waited till the end of the season before they put them on Peacock, which was really nice. There's also an amazing scene. Jennifer Tilly goes to prison, and somehow they let her – sorry, spoilers. But they somehow let her wear like a little short cutoff like prison outfit with some shit fishnets and some heels in prison. And yeah, that's now a thing for me.
Yeah, so now is a good time to catch up on Chucky, because there won't be any new episodes for a few more months. And so watch what's out there right now. Well, there's nothing bad in that series. Like, that series is fantastic.
God, I love the characters. It's
better than right to be.
You know, it's so often that in horror movies you have characters that you don't really get. I'm attached to every character. Like, I don't want any of the characters to die. Like, in season two, there was a death that really I was like,
oh.
Yeah,
you're exactly what you're talking about.
I'm like, it fucking gutted me. I was like,
I'm in pain the moment you said that.
If there's one person, I was rooting for everybody in the show, but I was rooting for them probably the most. And I'm just saying, it's a really hard feat to do in horror, because, and I think one of the challenges, if you ever do bring back, you know, Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers has been back. Let's talk about that. Or Freddy Krueger, is you have to make the characters, like in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, you wanted Nancy and Johnny Depp's ass to live, actually. Right. And, you know, I'm gonna say is every Nightmare on Elm Street has some protagonist that you can latch onto.
Well, okay. Here's my thing about that, and why I think Nightmare on Elm Street does that so well, is because it usually takes place over like a week, so you have a chance for each death to have meaning if you know people. And there's always like a funeral scene. Like, we've never had a funeral scene in any Halloween or any Friday 13th movie, because it all happens over like one night. No one has any chance to realize.
Even in Halloween,
that's why I like that series. That's why I think the characters in that realm sheet stand out so much more.
But even in Halloween 2018, those characters were really very well done. Like, you wanted you wanted Lori and her daughter and her granddaughter to survive, and you even wanted the husband to survive, even though he doesn't really do jujitsu. He lied about that shit. Because when Michael kills him and he's choking him and he doesn't defend with two on one hands, I'm like, I teach people that fucking day one. Sorry, but. I think even Friday the 13th did it, because at least even when you had episodes or movies where the characters may not have been super well defined, there's always those couple you're like rooting for. Obviously Tommy Jarvis, but even like in Jason Takes Manhattan, you're kind of rooting for that boxer dude to fucking murk Jason up on top of that roof.
Or even, part five, one of the most hated Friday 13th movies. It's got Demon in his damn enchiladas, you know, man. Yeah, like, I want a Demon to make it out.
Yeah, you want Demon to make it out? And Friday 5 is totally, fine.
I like Friday 5. It's actually higher for me than a lot of the other ones.
All right.
That's my other controversial Friday opinion. But, we went through a thing with slashers where there was a time where, like, all the characters were, you're just waiting for them to get killed. Like, that's a lot of slashers. But I like the ones where you actually care about the characters, and seeing them get killed hurts a little bit, you know? Like, oh man, I wanted them to stay around longer.
I'm not going to lie. If I'm 30 minutes into a slasher movie and I've asked how come no one's dead yet, that means your characters are unlikable. That means I'm not getting anything from them. Like, I need to, or there's times I've been 5 minutes in, like, why is nobody dying? Because these are all the most annoying human beings. Like, and I'll use a Friday the 13th remake as a great example of this, was that, like, they didn't put any substance into the teens really that were there. It was all about Jason, and all you want to do is see these kids get killed. And the counterbalance of that, which came out, I think, same year? Did Cabin in the Woods come out?
I think so, yeah.
No, it was later.
Oh, later? I'm still going to say that's the antithesis of that, where you want to see these people succeed because you've latched onto the characters.
Yeah.
It's such an important thing in horror that I think is missed by a lot of and, you know, I don't want to say less talented directors or writers, but maybe people that are trying to still learn the craft and coming up.
They want to get to the good stuff. They want to get to the gore. So they don't take any time to invest in actually making interesting characters. But the characters make the good stuff better.
And that can be fine too, though, right? Like, sometimes you do just want to see like a splatterfest.
Yeah.
But I always tell people, like, the beauty of Terrifier 2 isn't so much in Art the Clown or the gore. It's in the heroine.
Sierra. I like Sierra. Her.
She is, what's her name? Laverna is her last name, I think. Phenomenal actress, and I think she's so wonderful in that movie. And by the end, like, I didn't think I'd be rooting against Art the Clown, and I'm rooting against Art the Clown. Yeah. I want to see her fucking kill him, because she's such a good, and her brother, too, for the most part. Like, I like him, too, actually.
Yeah.
I was invested in him, too.
All right. Jody, do we have any more horror news?
That's it. I'm done.
All right. Let's move on to the Patreon pit, our would you rather for the week. Would you rather have dinner with Hannibal Lecter or Patrick Bateman?
Easy. Lecter, for sure. We'd have cool conversation. I'd get to try human flesh. Life would be interesting. Whereas Patrick Bateman, the whole time, you'd be like, he's like a socially awkward guy, right? Like, you got to think about it. When you're watching the movie American Psycho or reading the book, so much dialogue is going on in his head. And it has to be a moment where someone asks him a question and they have this weird, awkward, like 30-second silence while he's answering the question in his head first. That'd be a weird, weird dinner. Well, he probably paid though, so that'd be, it would be cool.
You know, Patrick Bateman, I feel like he could get to be insufferable at a dinner party pretty quick, you know, like hanging out with him. Because it's fun to listen to someone talk about music who's passionate about it, you know, the Huey Lewis and the News thing. But also, there's just something about him that's going to come across as like, my tastes are so much better than yours. Just pull out your business card. And he seems like he could be a difficult person to hang out with.
Let's just throw a curveball to this, though. But he did get reservations for you guys at Dorsia.
Exactly.
That's true.
I was going to say, it depends on where you're going to dinner. Also, he probably has better drugs than Hannibal Lecter. The Hannibal Lecter is a doctor, so he has access to more drugs.
I don't know. I feel like Patrick Bateman's doing the kind that make me nervous. He doesn't seem like he relaxes a whole lot. It seems like he hypes himself up more.
But I don't know. I feel like Hannibal Lecter would be like trying to figure me out. And I'd be like, that would be like, do you want a guy who's asking really awkward questions about you?
You out, Jason.
Like, would you rather it be someone who's like asking awkward questions about you or someone who's awkwardly talking about themselves too much? At least guy, you can just like shut up and just, you know, let him talk himself out.
Hannibal Lecter has some stories, right? And he's a good cook. So you're going to have some good wine and some good food. Yeah, and later on, he might convince you to peel your face off. But that's a whole nother story. what are our Patreons pick, Jason?
Yeah, so 83% said Hannibal Lecter, 17% said Patrick Bateman. Our friend Janet said at least Hannibal is good conversation. Bateman is shallow, which no one can argue.
Yeah.
Tommy said, is Hannibal Lecter cooking the meal? Because that's a hard no. I mean, from fresh, I was like, I would try that meatball. I'm like, okay.
Dude, you know what, man? Like, did you ever hear the story about the guy that had his leg amputated and served it to his friends at a dinner party?
Yeah.
And told him what they were going to do. And I would totally be down for that. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I would totally try human flesh. I'd have no problem fucking doing that as long as it was a situation like that. I don't want to actually try it from someone who was murdered against their will.
No.
I should say someone, because there was a whole movie based on a horror movie based on this too, called Cannibal, about in Germany, where someone put a Craigslist ad looking for someone to eat and killed the guy and ate him. And the guy was fucking there was consent. No safe word was said. And I still wouldn't want to eat human in that regard. But like Jason, if you lost a leg and invited us over to fucking eat your leg, like I'm down. Like I'm gonna get me a big old mouthful of Jason.
You know, ever since getting my Fitbit watch, I have been taking a lot more steps. So I'm working that leg muscle for you, Mondo.
Mm.
No, our next piece of merch is going to be a picture of Mondo with the words, "Let me get a mouthful, big mouthful of Jason."
That is merch.
And I can screen capture that O face he gave earlier. So
that's fine. Whatever floats your boat. Like,
all right. Now we move on to our dad advice. Mondo, something.
Oh, I don't really have advice. I'm hoping one of you guys had to have advice. But I had this weird epiphany yesterday. Also tying this Amigo the Devil song. I had a weird epiphany yesterday. And I was like, why do I dislike Christmas so much and love Halloween so much? And it was because, and not to be like, to get real on this fucking podcast, but you know, I grew with parents, like I said, with drug addict alcoholics. And Halloween was like the one holiday that I didn't have to rely on my parents or my family to give me a good holiday. Like it was up to the whims of strangers. Which probably ties into why I give out full-size candy bars. I hope that kid that's got a shitty home life comes to my house and gets that full-size candy bar. And even if it's just for fucking 5 seconds, makes his night. Because I know how much that meant to me as a kid, like getting candy. And I just truly think that, like, the point of this, though, is that, like, you can really, like, no one can tell you what, like, I had a lot of teenagers show up yesterday and possibly a 40-year-old man. I couldn't tell if he was 12 or 40. He would have been at home in any like high school slasher film from the 80s. He walks his backpack. I said, "Hey," and he goes, "Sup?" Took a candy bar and goes, "Thanks, bro." I said, "You're welcome." I don't fucking know what just happened. Was not dressed in costumes, had his backpack, but you know what? I don't give a shit, dude. If you come to my house and want a candy bar, you're getting a fucking candy bar. I had one adult dressed like a police officer, and him and his daughter came up, and he goes, "Ooh, can I grab an M&M's?" I'm like, "Fuck yeah, dude, you can get the M&M's." And then he saw inside my house, which a lot of my wife's artwork's in there, and I have all these Nightmare on Elm Street posters, and he goes, "Holy shit, I love the inside of your house." I said, "Dude, this is my house year-round." And he goes, "Mine's the same way." And we didn't like exchange numbers or anything. And I'm just gonna be thinking about that guy now until I die. Cause I'm like, maybe we could have been friends.
Yeah.
But he was dressed like a cop.
He knows where you live.
He does. He does. But he's also dressed like a cop. And that is also, now I think about that, that's kind of,
maybe he was just a cop.
But he did have kind of short shorts on. So maybe he was Lieutenant Dangle, in which case I'm game. But my dad advice really is, and I want you guys to chip in too and like maybe figure something out. I don't know. But like, dude, don't be the gatekeeper of Halloween. Anyone that comes to your door gets fucking candy. Give them fucking candy. If an 18-year-old kid is out trick-or-treating and not wearing a costume, I don't give a shit, dude. They're out having a good time, man. Like, I think us at our ages, let me ask you guys a question. At what age did you stop trick-or-treating?
I don't remember. It's probably definitely around middle school. I was never a biggest trick-or-treater, but partly because in Oregon, it was pretty much always raining on Halloween growing up. So like you would trick-or-treat
every day.
And then, it was always raining. So you just kind of trick-or-treat up your street really quick before you got too wet. And then you just went and dried off the rest of the day. Around that time. We put out the candy, then did our own trick-or-treating. So, I mean, we weren't like gatekeeping anyone anyways, but like I said, did I say this on camera earlier, but we actually, my wife has a great idea to put out one big thing of candy and then another thing of toys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so they put like, you know, in case of allergies or whatever, here's some toys, or like, a lot of sensory seeking kids would rather have that. And we let kids take one of each, because when we got home after we were done, me and my daughter just stayed outside, and you know, I was playing like spooky, I was playing like horror movie soundtracks on my phone.
Nice.
And she was just there like talking to people, and she's the most social kid I've ever seen. Like, she'll go to anybody and make friends with them like instantly. Mm-hmm. And we happen to be like, you know, sometimes when you're trick-or-treating with kids, you know, like sync up your route with some other random kids.
Yeah.
There's this girl who's probably like 2 years, maybe 3 years older. She was with her mom and her grandma. They're walking, and we all just started like walking kind of in sync. And then Nora and her became like best friends by the end of the night.
Awesome though, dude. Like that's so cool.
Yeah. Exchange numbers. So like, you know, I was like, that's so cool. I do want to say that we have this tradition where we put out, we have this like little like 27 inch or whatever TV. And usually around Halloween, we put out the TV and we watch movies in our yard outside.
That's cool.
So for the first time, I actually watched A Nightmare Before Christmas. The whole thing. I've like seen bits and pieces. It was like on TV or whatever. I never sat down and just watched it. And
you know, if I can say any movie, there's probably two movies I've seen more than any other movie in my life, and it's Lion King and it's Night Before Christmas, because those are my daughter's movies growing up. So we watch those movies every fucking day.
Yeah. And my, you know, and they loved it. And then but I didn't realize it was so short. So I was like, well, we got time. Let me put on one of my favorite movies growing up, which was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It was also a short movie.
Jason shows I'm raw.
No. So my son wasn't too into it. You know, the black and whiteness of it and all that. He did like some like the physical humor, the Adam Costello humor, but my some daughter, of
that stuff, especially nowadays, is a lot. I mean, even when we were young, I think a lot of that stuff's very difficult to get.
I still say that movie holds up extremely well.
Oh, I know those Abbott and Costello movies have ridiculous, like just goofy humor that.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, and some goofy stuff just is timeless.
Yeah.
So my daughter watched the whole movie outside, cuddled up together. That was really fun.
Well, I think I'm trying to talk my wife into doing this Christmas Halloween outfit. By the way, she was Tiffany Valentine this year. It was a great night. And next year I'm gonna try to get that prison jumpsuit. But I said we'll be a gray Halloween costume. We'll be pretend like you're sitting on a scale, like a old school scale, but the other side is a duck. And you can be a witch from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Nice, nice.
There you go. Okay. Oh, you mean like the teeter?
Yes.
I think you meant like the one at the doctor's office that had like the counterweights.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's what my, not that one, but no, like the actual scale, like the justice, like the scale. I think that'd be awesome because that's one of my favorite movies of all time. And that scene in that movie in particular, when she has the witch's nose on and someone goes, "You look like a witch." And she goes, "They dress me up like this." And the crowd's like, no, yes, a bit.
I love
Turn me into a newt. I got better.
Yeah. But yeah, so your question earlier, I think I was probably sometime in middle school too. I do distinctly remember one year trick-or-treating in a neighborhood where an older lady it's a lady who we're aware of, like we knew her. But she came to the door and would say, "Trick or treat, ho, 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 trick or treat, ho, ho, ho." And I think I don't know if she was just confused or enthusiastic, but we were having a good time. She was having a good time. Everybody was happy. But yeah, you know, my kids went trick or treating this year, and I've got some that are getting to be middle school and a little bit older. But, you know, if that's what they want to do and they want to go out and trick or treat again, like, absolutely. I'm never going to tell anybody, like, don't go do that. That's the kind of fun. That, you know, it'd be kind of nice at 42 years old to be able to reclaim a little bit of that fun again. Dude, you know?
if a fucking group of adults, the neighbor across here that just moved in, she came over to get candy. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. Like, yeah. Like, come on, man. Like, I look at it as when we were younger, especially like, you're too old to trick or treat. Like, fuck, dude. Like, hold on to that as long as you can.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful times and, you know, is what it is.
Alrighty.
While we were talking about that, I thought of some great like dad advice, and I just fucking forgot it as I started talking again. So I feel like it was poignant and would have been fantastic. And now it's
probably would have moved some people to tears.
It might have been, dude.
You could have, like, you know, brought about world peace, but
dude,
you lost it.
I'm just gonna say, man, like being at a concert with my favorite artist and plus my daughter's favorite artist, and I just couldn't stop looking over and just seeing how happy she looked. And that's like all you can really ask for as a parent.
It's
best time ever.
To occasionally have those moments. I've been going through this a little bit recently too, where I've been doing something with my kids or hanging out or just like my wife just came back from a trip to Canada. And so my youngest daughter, while we were gone, her big sisters were out of the room. And so a lot of times she would come lay down with me when she was ready to go to bed. Doesn't do that much, you know, normally. But she'd lay there and she'd fall asleep on my arm, which would be going numb. And I'd just be laying there thinking, this is just like the best possible life right now. Like just being with my family and getting to do these cool things and being around these kids It's the best. I love it. Like, I love seeing them happy.
I'll stand in the, so my daughter is only 5'1". So the joke's on her. I felt really bad about this, but I think I said this before, but she was like 5'1" in middle school. And she's like, fuck, I might be as tall as dad. And then she just never grew another inch. Which is kind of how my life was too. I was like 5'10" in high school or in middle school. And just never grew anymore. That was just the end
middle
of
school. Middle school was my stopping point.
Yeah.
I got to 5'11" and a half. I wanted that half inch, never got it.
I mean, who doesn't want a half inch? Like, an extra half inch can go a long way. But but she wants to be up against the rail. I never thought about this. Like, if you're short, that's the best place to be at a concert, right? Because you can see everything. You don't got to deal with is that another Sharpie, Jason? You've been playing with Sharpies the whole night. The same one? Okay. They don't look black, and that one's red. What do you use a red Sharpie for? Is there?
I don't know. It was just here.
Are you grading papers? I know you're not a teacher. But I'm standing on the rail and she wants to go buy merch, and she bought me a t-shirt and bought me a pin and wouldn't let me pay her back for it. To be fair, I did pay for the gas and the hotel and the concert tickets, which I have no problem doing. Please understand that. That's not, I'm not saying that like I want her to pay me back. No, I would happily do that again. While sitting on the rail, man, like I talked to you guys earlier, but like my job's really kind of rocky right now. We start laying people off, and I don't think I'll have a job in 6 months. I'm just gonna be honest. I will, but not at this company. And I was there, man, and that's been bugging me so much. But I sat there and I had that moment of zen. Granted, edible induced zen, which is okay because sometimes, but sometimes though that makes your brain like think in the right manner. And sure. I thought, man, like no matter what happens, I have the best fucking family. And yep. I know they'll support me no matter what happens. I need to like get out of my own head and realize that no matter what happens, like I know they're going to be right here for me and I'll figure it out. And that's all you really ask for, right? Like in life.
Yeah.
And then last night, my daughter went out on Halloween. She comes back this morning. She's 20. She can do that. I don't give a shit. And her car battery died. And I said, do you want to go take care of it now? Because you didn't take care of it last night. She said she's going to take care of it last night. And she goes, she told me, and I'm just going to say this on here, and I'll ask her later if it's okay if I keep this in, or because if it just cuts off right here, she said, no, I can't keep this in. If it if it doesn't cut off right now, then yeah, she let me keep it in. But she came home, and she goes, I said, you know, why didn't you take care of last night? She goes, oh, I had a little bit too much to drink and didn't think I should be driving. And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. Like, that's, yes. I'm super happy you made that decision. That's the right decision to make. And just to a few parents out there with kids that are teenagers, like, we're teenagers. We did stupid shit and drank and stuff like that. If your kid wants to spend the night at a friend's house because they've been drinking, don't be mad at them. They're making a great decision. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of adults that don't make that decision. And that's the right decision for anybody. And I was pretty proud of that. I was like, all right, I'm going to raise you. Okay.
Nice.
I'm going to start crying on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. Let's hold it in, man. We're going to wrap this up.
I remember I was young and didn't cry about anything. And now, like, I see a sad commercial and I'm like in fucking tears on the couch. Like, why? Why do they not let the dog inside when you want to come inside?
Now just think about it from the other side. You said you didn't cry as a kid. I was the kid who saw the commercials as a kid and got emotional about them. And so it just gets worse.
I was the kid who cried at the end of every Godzilla movie because I don't know why they had to kill him.
Yeah, but, man.
To be fair, though, when I was a kid and cried, I got hit. So
that too. But
I just bottled that shit up in here and let it kill me inside. It's fine. I've worked through it. Oh, my mom did call me the other day. That was fun. I was looking through my blocked voicemails today. So my mom said, please call me. I was like, no, delete. You know what? If you have shitty family, you are not obligated to keep them in your lives. Just saying.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Every fucking dad advice right there. I don't give a fuck who it is. They don't. You do not have to keep them in your life. I choose you guys to be in my life. You guys are good people. I mean that. And God, sound very sarcastic, but I actually do really mean that. And
like good people, Mondo.
I don't know, dude. Like in my eyes, you're good. I don't know. Why do you do shit that I don't know about that you're bad? Like, I do some weird shit behind closed doors, but, like, nothing that's hurt anybody else but me. So.
All right. On that note,
my child's coworkers listen to this podcast. I'm like, what? which like, it's funny. One of those things, like if you any people in your real life that say they listen to the podcast, I'm like, what?
No, what podcast?
Why?
What? Hmm. When you immediately start like thinking through everything you've said. What if?
All right.
Oh god.
Next week's movie is to be determined, but I'm sure it will be a banger.
Oh, you're hearing this on Sunday, and you have an idea. You have like 4 hours. Send it to Jason, and we'll figure it out.
Pretty much. All right. But we appreciate everyone. Oh my
god! This message in chat, and now I am fucking just.
All right.
Oh my god!
Become one big blubbering mess. We appreciate everyone for listening. We'd really appreciate if you'll give us a rating, review, and iTunes.
Smash that subscribe button, bro.
Rating on Spotify. Check out YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch. But be careful what you ask for. You may get it.